and welcome to the Road Smart Biker Podcast.
This is episode 4.
And I'm your host, Chris Kelly. In conversation with me today is the full Local Observer Assessor team, which is Andrew Melton, Con Grant, and David Murphy. This week's topic has been requested by one of our observers. We're going to talk about rear observations and blind spot checks. I always call them blind spot checks because it tells you exactly what the action is. I really dislike when people call it a shoulder check. Would you guys disagree with that?
Don't think so.
No, not really.
Okay, which leads me into another thing that was a pet hate of mine, which is the dogmatic, a blind spot check is only a blind spot check when you put your chin to your shoulder. As far as I'm concerned, it absolutely depends what bike you're riding, what sort of mirrors you've got, how big you are, what you're wearing. A blind spot check is about checking what's in your blind spot. Chin to shoulder may be more than is required, or maybe less than is required.
Good way to get a bitten tongue when you go over a pothole. I was going to say, I think the first thing you need to establish is why we should be doing blind spot checks in the first place. It's okay to explain what they are, but one of the pet hates for me, and we all have pet hates, and we're all venting them out on the internet with these podcasts, one of my pet hates is when they do blind spot checks by rote. So, for example, as they go through a speed gate, they do a blind spot check to the left and the right. Why? Frequently, well, I was told to. But people are doing these things without understanding why they are doing them, what they are looking for, where they should be looking, and when they should be looking.
Dave?
I think the whole thing about rear obs is, or the way I view it, is you get the associate asking you, when should I be doing them? Should I be doing them every now and again, every 10 seconds or whatever? The normal answer I usually give is, if there's an upcoming hazard and it's making you either lose your speed or increase your speed, or it's making you alter your position, then you should be checking your mirrors. Depending on how often you've been checking your mirrors prior to this, would also depend if you needed to do a blind spot check. So let's say you're on an NSL road, you're coming down to 30 mile an hour zone. Depending on how often you've been checking your mirrors prior to this, you would know if there's any vehicles behind you. If there is a vehicle behind you, has it maintained his distance the whole time you've been on the NSL? Has he closed that gap up, i.e. has he increased his speed, or has he dropped back on approach to the 30? So taking the system as you're supposed to use it, using information first, and then take, use, give. So if you were to decide to slow down instead of just backing off the throttle, depending on where the vehicle is behind you, then you may decide or you may consider to flash your brake light to let them know you're slowing down. The other way around is on approach to an NSL from a 30, you get a lot of people thinking they should do a blind spot check just before the gates. The whole idea of it is if you've been using your mirrors prior to this anyway, you should have a rough idea of what's behind you. And if you are going to do a blind spot check, you should be doing it at the very earliest opportunity. Getting your own head that there isn't anything inside you and concentrating on what you're doing forwards.
I think what Dave's saying there is something that we pick up on quite regularly. Why you do the blind spot checks and where you do them. It is before the hazard, not when you've reached the hazard and decide to do something about it. So it's in the planning phase on the approach to the hazard that you are gathering all the information around you in front and behind, and then using that in your plan. What we see all too often is that riders and drivers, for that matter, do these things when they're actually at the hazard. So if they're going to turn right, they start turning right, and then they do a blind spot check. If you was going to get hit, you hit. It's got to be done before you commit to the maneuver. And that seems to be an issue for a lot of people. And I don't know whether it's the way they're taught. I mean, we weren't taught blind spot checks. You know, all four of us passed our tests before there was any proper tuition as it is today. but we've still picked up on doing these things and putting them in the right place. Some of that is through the IAM training. Some of that will have been through what we developed as survival techniques ourselves over the years that we was about.
Yeah, I think you touched on a good point, Andrew. And it's this idea by rote. To pass your bike test, you are taught to do things by rote. And this goes back to our theme we were talking about in the last podcast, which is about the thinking rider. So do it when it's appropriate, when it's useful. And absolutely, as you say, the key thing is do it before you commit to make a change in whatever you're doing. I think one of the things that we encourage people to do is think about when that might be. So typically at traffic lights, it's worthwhile considering a blind spot check, both left and right, because you may have cyclists on the inside, particularly in city. Typically in situations such as a motorway, right, where you may have checked your mirrors, but there's always the chance that there's someone really fast moving in the outside lane, and on the approach to speed gates, you know, it may be worth considering. But again, it's the it may be worth rather than you must do. And I think that's what people are taught in their bike test. You must do this because that's what the examiner will be looking for in those particular situations.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I think Chris said something some time ago. I remember it struck a chord with me that as we progress through the stages of riding, the direction that we are given by others is actually a series of diminishing lies. So when you're first learning to ride, you're told to get into a higher gear as possible, as soon as possible. The reason behind that is you've got less torque available, so you're less likely on a more powerful bike to spin the wheel out a bit, and you're less likely to lose control with it accelerating hard. We tell people to use more acceleration, use more of the gears, because we want them to use the performance of the bike and make relatively brisk progress without losing control of the machine. So, you know, it is, I can understand when they're doing the CBT and when they're doing the Mod 1 that they're told they have to do these things because, you know, I was told when I took my first driving test, put the mirrors out of position so you've got to be seen to be looking in the mirrors. Probably a good idea. Maybe, maybe not. But it is sort of a series of diminishing lies in order to get us to where we are. We should be looking at developing this thought process that says, is it necessary? Do we have to do it? What are the benefits of doing it? And if we are doing it, why are we doing it? What are we looking for?
Yes, it's the question of what's the benefit and what's the optimal time for performing the action. So if we can take perhaps the specific case of changes of speed limit, I've heard many an observer say that it must be done at every change of speed limit. If that's your worst habit, then it's probably not a dreadful one to have. Well, you're not really thinking about what you're doing. You're just doing it as a matter of rote. And what we'd like you to do is actually consider, is there a need for it and why you're doing it and where does the benefit derive? And that's where quite often we see associates get into this, oh, I've got to do a blind spot check at a change of speed limit, and they do it as they pass through the gate, which is way too late, because the reason that you're doing it at the change of speed limit is most other motorists, most other road users do not slow down to hit whatever that diminished speed is as they pass through the gate. They'll think about slowing down after they've passed through the gate. So the idea is you take them by surprise by you slowing down sooner and obviously puts yourself at risk. So what we want to do is, as Dave said, we want to look for what the potential risk from behind is. You should have a good idea of what it is from looking in your mirrors. If you've not passed a junction, a gate of any sort, and you're on the same piece of road, unless the vehicle has been down out of space, there's not going to be one suddenly appear. So if you've been making good rear observations on the approach and you see that change of speed limit, a confirmatory look in the mirrors is probably good enough. If the road is relatively straight with not much hazards either before or beyond it, other than the change of speed limit, then the risks are probably relatively small. It's where if you're entering into this lower speed limit zone, quite often that might be an area where you're then starting to be coming across parked vehicles, pedestrians and all those other things that may cause you to make a lateral move. And it's the lateral move in the face of a fast approaching vehicle that then it gets serious and dangerous. So yeah, it's about the thought process of the why and where. To go to the other case that you mentioned, Andrew, the right turn and the blind spot check being combined with turning the bars is not an uncommon one to see. It should be part of your planning on the approach. You know, it's the first phase in the system, the information bit. You're gathering the information and you're also giving information by that turn of your head to anyone following. It's an early signal, even if you've not got your indicator on.
Another thing we come across quite regular is associates don't actually have a mirror set right to start off with. Because when they're looking in the mirrors, all they can see basically their elbows. What I found we like to do is when we first meet them, ask them to sit on the bike and see exactly where the mirrors are before they go.
Yeah.
What it actually does is it makes them turn their head. So when they're actually turning, not alone can we see them turning red, and we know they're checking the mirrors, but it's also giving information to drivers, i.e. what's he looking at?
Yeah, mirrors is something I pick on quite often. It's surprising the number of riders who say the mirrors are useless. All I can see is my elbows. Well, if you're trying to have both mirrors focusing on the number plate of a vehicle that's 20 feet behind you, then that is all you are going to see. Why do you need both mirrors looking in exactly the same point at that sort of distance? Whereas realistically, they should be pushing the mirrors to have a much wider field of vision, preferably with the near side one looking down the side of the bike at the stuff that's immediately behind them, on the offside one looking more towards vehicles that would be riding to the right of them, so that they've got a better sight of vehicles overtaking. They have less of a blind spot that way.
While you're in the car park there, you can do that walk around behind them and get them to say, you know, sit at your normal position, look in your mirror as you normally would with your head static, and you tell me when I disappear from view. He's like, well, that's where your blind spot starts, and let me know when I reappear in your peripheral vision. That's where your blind spot ends, and that's what you need to be covering when you turn your head to check your blind spot. If you cannot cover that full range, then you need to move your head even more.
Yep. And of course, the other thing about moving the head is it gives us an indication of when they've actually spotted a hazard and started planning for it. So the number of times when you can see that there's been a reduction in the speed limit that you've seen for half, three quarters of a mile back, so you've been thinking about what you're going to do with it, how you're going to deal with it, and then they get about 200 yards from it and all of a sudden they wake up, oh, well, that's a 30. it's quite comedic sometimes when you see some of them. I do remember one rider on a three-wheeled machine, one of these with the twin front wheels, going through a speed gate, realizing it was there, and as he went through the gate, the road narrowed and there was a speed bump.
Oh!
I was amazed at his skill to stay on the bike.
Yeah, the other one, when they saw the hazard that you've described, the next question is, well, why didn't you do something about it?
They just struggle a little bit with that thought process. I think one of the things they feel is, well, I'm on the road, it's my priority. They do say right of way, but it's a priority. I'm just going to go. Well, it might be your priority, but you will be prioritized into an ambulance and off to A&E if you take it for granted that everybody else is going to grant that priority.
We've kind of dropped into it anyway, but rear observations and blind spot checks don't happen in isolation. They're obviously in combination with good forward observations. The way I usually describe it as a quick mantra for the associate, what you want to be doing is looking far, middle, near and in the rear. And you do this transition of far being a scanning of the horizon so you can see which way the road's coming, you're looking for vehicles approaching from side roads, you're looking for pedestrians waiting at crossings, that might jump out and bite us. Then you move into that middle ground, which is the road surface as far as you can see, and any signs along it that give you an indication of other hazards that might be coming up. Near will be obviously looking for road surface imperfections, anything lying in the road. And as you transition from that near to in the rear, I always recommend that that's the time to check the instruments, you know, check your speed, check for any warning lights or anything else. And then you transition into this checking your mirrors. And then, if necessary, you consider the blind spot check. I would suggest if you're going to make a lateral movement of any sort, then that consideration should be even higher that it's likely to happen, because if you're going to move to either side, you want to make sure it's clear for you to do that move. If you're going to be staying on the same path with no particular change in speed, then it's unlikely that you're going to need to do a blind spot check. Anything to add to that, chaps?
Yeah, just to agree with the link between forward and rear obs, Chris. So you've spotted a hazard which is going to make you change direction, speed, whatever else it might be. And at that point, I think there's a natural transition from your forward obs to your rear obs. Now that I know that I've got to react to this hazard in front of me, I also need to make sure what's behind me, because is that going to influence my decisions about what I'm going to do next? So very much tied in. And I think people struggle to kind of get the fact that both are tied together. So as we progress through the course, I think we're looking for that transition from the there's a corner coming up, am I going to see a rear observation to check if I need to do something different to what I'm planning? I think as we get into the sort of the latter part of the course, we're looking for that natural connection between forward obs and rear obs.
Yeah, and I think there's an even greater degree of finesse, granularity, however you want to describe it, that you've made the leap from, I've seen a hazard ahead, now what's behind me, how is that going to impact my decision making? It's not just, oh, there's a vehicle behind me. It's a, what is that vehicle? Is it Joe Average in his family hatchback out to go and do the shopping? Is it one of the Max Power Brigade on lowered suspension and flared arches with his baseball cap on backwards and thumping house music blaring out of it that sat 6 feet from your tailpipe? Is it the delivery driver that's not particularly paying attention because they're looking at the A to Z or the sat nav trying to find the address that they've got to go and deliver to? Is it the fully loaded HGV that's got a much longer stopping distance? All of these things need to be considered as you transition into that rear observation that feeds into your riding plan about how you're going to manage the hazard that you've seen in front.
You touch on a point there, Chris, that it's also about the duration of that rear obs. And I think we've seen this occasion where people are, you know, saying, I'm looking in my mirrors, but they might be looking at their mirror, but they're not taking in the information of what is actually behind them. So that's another very salient point.
Yeah, if anyone wants to get into the technicalities of it, they can go and look up a topic called saccades. But basically, you are blind while your eyes are moving. And what happens is your eyes take a number of snapshots. The thing that you are focused on in the centre of your vision is easily picked up by the brain, but anything that's in peripheral vision will only tend to be picked up if it's moving. It goes back to our caveman days of the wild beast in the long grass. It's a defence mechanism that we pick up movement, not static things. Now, if your eyes are moving and your eyes are taking snapshots, then nothing is moving within your vision system. So you do need to pause your vision to give it time for your peripheral vision to pick up those movements.
I think that was one of the things that you and I both picked up on when we were gifted a ride out with a police officer for the day, with his tap-tap when he was describing how he looked in his mirrors and where he did it, which was actually quite informative. And some of the things that you and I discussed afterwards about what we was doing instinctively, he sort of made as more of a formal way of looking at it. For example, checking the mirrors before you're about to go over the crest of a hill or to go around the bend, so that you've got, before you lose the view that is behind you, so that you've got an idea of exactly where things are going to be when you exit that bend.
Yes, and I remember him chastising us both for only looking in the offside mirrors or going round right-hand bends. He's saying, why didn't you check your near-side mirror? Well, it was looking at the hedge.
Yeah, so unless it was another police bike that was going to be coming up fast, nobody was likely to be in that position. But he chastised us, and we then had quite a discussion with him about why the police do teach that way and why we were sort of looking at something else. But he was very insistent that you actually have to look to the mirror and look in it and then come back, so that way you have focused on what you're doing. And we've all discussed the sorry mate, where you apparently somebody has looked at you and then not seen you. So they've looked but not seen, because the look has been a look by rote. They come up to that junction every day. There's never anything coming. They look right, they look left, they set off, but they don't look. They only turn the head. They don't have a chance to focus. So it is about that pause and focus before going back, which then, you know, raises another question. If you're pausing and focusing to look at your mirror and you're going forward at 70 miles an hour, you've travelled quite a distance. So it's important that you get your forward observations in first, so that you know what's going on around you and what's likely to happen whilst you're bringing your vision back for the rear view.
It reminds me of two particular anecdotes. One was one of our observers many years ago. I was having this conversation with him about pausing the vision long enough to take in what's happening. And his response was, well, if I do that, I might run in the back of the vehicle in front of me. So, well, okay, think it through. What do you need to do then? Back off. You know, if you haven't got time enough to have a good look behind you, then you were too close to the vehicle in front. The other one was when I'd just become an observer on bikes, I was given an associate who claimed to be a Class 1 police driver. And I thought, what on earth can I teach him? It didn't take very long before I knew exactly what I was going to talk to him about. And he was doing blind spot checks like it was a nervous tick. And it was painfully obvious he wasn't taking in any information, but the frequency that he was doing them, he was increasing his risk from the front. In one case, there was a tight left-hand bend on a relatively narrow road. You could see that the paint on the apex of the bend was all scrubbed away, so it was obvious that cars were cutting this corner. And just as he approached this left-hand bend, he did a blind spot check. I thought, you know, why on earth are you looking that way when all the danger is in front of you? And when I pulled him over and we had a chat about it, he absolutely denied that he'd done it, which convinced me that he wasn't taking anything in. It was just a habit that he got into. So what I said was, every time he did it, I was going to give him a little toot on the horn. And then eventually, when we came to the debrief, he said to me, I just had no idea I was doing that. He said I was completely oblivious, and it was only your little toots that realised I was doing it. And you're right, I was taking in no information. So if you're going to take your eyes from the direction of travel, you first need to have a bloody good reason to do it. And if you are going to do it, then make sure it's of some benefit by taking in the information.
Yep, can't argue with that.
As long as it's appropriate, that's all that should matter. Like your lads have been saying, it has to benefit you. No point just doing it for doing it's sake.
Right. Thank you very much, guys, for your time on this recording again. And thank you to anyone that is listening. We had a few less for the last one, but it was a good deal longer. So I think we've been recording for about half an hour by the time I've edited this down. It'll hopefully come down to 20, 25 minutes. So thanks, guys. I appreciate your time and efforts. And catch you on the next one.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
See you guys. Got that out of your system.
You could have muted your mic.
You didn't have a chance. You were speaking that bloody much.